This is Fresh Air. I'm Dave Davies, senior writer for the Philadelphia Daily News, filling in for Terry Gross. As rescue operations continue in New Orleans and other areas affected by Hurricane Katrina, the Army Corps of Engineers reports it has repaired breaches in two levees that protected the city from floodwaters. The Corps has begun pumping water out of the city, but it's expected to take many weeks before it's dry. Soon officials will turn to the task of rebuilding. To discuss the future of New Orleans, I spoke this morning with Christina Ford. From 1992 to 2000, she was Director of City Planning for the City of New Orleans. She's currently a professor of environmental studies at Bowdoin College in Brunswick, Maine. Tell us what happens to buildings and homes that have stood in, let's say, 2 to 10 feet of water for a period of weeks or months. Give us an idea of which of these structures can be saved. Let's start with frame houses, wooden frame houses.
Well, I think that the wooden frame houses will all probably have to be torn down. I mean, unless they have been built on piers that are stone. And the architecture in New Orleans has some, aside from the beauty that everyone in America probably is aware of or at least has seen pictures of, they also have a function. The raised cottages, one of their functions has been to keep the level of the first floor up above floods. And some of my friends, for instance, live in very, very high raised cottages. They're 12 or 15 feet above the level of the street. So houses that are like that and that have got stones as their foundation will probably survive. The ones, and there are some houses, I knew of one in the French Quarter where I used to live, that was built right on the ground. And that house probably, I can't imagine that it could survive.
Now, what about bigger structures, office buildings, shopping centers?
Well, I think that the office buildings, you can see them. I've watched the helicopters go over the city, and many of those office buildings are relatively new, and they were built when the building codes took into account flooding and hurricane and so forth. And so I think that there may be horrible, unimaginable water damage in the first floor, the first two floors of some of those buildings. But I think that the buildings are structurally sound.
And can be re-inhabited, you think, with some work?
Yes, I believe so. I'm a city planner, which I think one of the things you have to be a city planner is an optimist. And so I am optimistic that a lot of the buildings, once we clear away all the debris and the horrible things that are left in that water, that what we'll find is that those buildings downtown will be all right. You asked me earlier, Dave, about shopping centers. My sense of many shopping centers there is that they're built on a slab. And I would think that the damage to those structures would be horrible. I can tell you also, I had a friend who lived in a building in the Faubourg Marigny, which is just downstream of the French Quarter, who lived in an old house that was about a block away from the levee. And the building was stone. And he showed me once that there you could see the water line in his house from when Hurricane Betsy came through. And it was, I would say it was 12 feet high. And that building stood. I mean, it was a fine building. And he had left that old stain from the water just as a historical memory.
So there's hope for some of these places, yeah.
Oh, I think so. And I think one of the things that will happen once all the horrible part is over, that the city will start to really assess what they have and what can be salvaged and what needs to be rebuilt and in an orderly way bring the city back.
Planning is, by its nature, deliberative, the notion being that we make good decisions when we really think about it, when we hear from all of the interested parties and have a good airing of the issues. I mean, there will be enormous pressure with, as you say, hundreds of thousands of people, beyond those, of course, in big places like the Astrodome, but just folks who have been evacuated from their homes. What will that pressure do to the deliberative process?
Well, I think in my opinion, there has to be a very strong centralizing authority that makes sure that nothing is done in haste, because in all of this, I think that there are parts of the city that one might think as a planner, oh, if only we could start over. We wouldn't have the poorest people in town living so vulnerably, so far below sea level. And yet, at the time, and I was director of city planning for 8 years in New Orleans, at the time, it was unimaginable to say what we should do, say, to the lower Ninth Ward, is to move the people who live there into some other facility, maybe a barracks, something, and then move their houses onto safe ground, and then go back in and fill that land so that it comes up as high as, say, the French Quarter is, and then move the houses back, and then move the people back. It's unimaginable how much money that would have cost, and no one, I think, would have thought that it was a good idea to spend the money that way. They probably thought it was better to spend it on education, which is a rational choice, it seems to me. So my point to all of that is that in all of this, nature has wiped the slate clean in some areas, and we shouldn't be in a hurry to rebuild something the way that it was. What we should do is to figure out how we can rebuild it so that we don't have people again so poor and so vulnerable.
I've got to ask the question that Dennis Hastert, the Speaker of the House, asked and then drew a lot of criticism for. I mean, this is a city, established in 1718 and has been sinking ever since or losing some elevation, and it's, much of it is below sea level. Some will ask the question, does it make sense to rebuild a city on that site where it is so vulnerable to this kind of catastrophe?
As a professor of land use planning, I try to take what the speaker said in stride. I thought it was a bad time for him to have said such a thing. It seemed mean-spirited when there are so many people out of the city who are homeless. But what he's talking about, I think one can deal with rationally. There has been a great deal of work in the past that, and these are by people who are engineers and who know something about geography, that the Mississippi River seems to want to join the Atchafalaya River, which is to the west of New Orleans, and that the banks, the rivers kind of seem to want to join together, and there has been talk in the past, so we should go ahead and let it, and let that would be a straighter route to the Gulf of Mexico. Well, we let it, and we let it go down straight to the Gulf of Mexico, which may make some rational sense, and what? There isn't a city there, and so we'd have to spend several billion dollars to build a new city there where we have a new outlet to the port or to the Gulf, or we can say spend the same amount of money because there is plenty that will be salvageable in New Orleans and keep it the way that it was. And so the choice that he offers, not rebuild New Orleans, is he's creating a false choice in my mind.
Just to one more thought on this subject, I read that one expert, a professor from Texas A&M, said that some are going to say, if you want to rebuild New Orleans in such a vulnerable place, if citizens really want to do that, they should do it on their own tab and not with federal tax dollars. I mean, don't spend my money to once again leave yourselves vulnerable to this kind of catastrophe. Do you expect that kind of debate to be a factor?
The question that I think many people have is whether or not it makes sense to rebuild New Orleans or to build something that is so vulnerable to hurricanes. And I think that when one looks at the economic importance of the Port of New Orleans, it derives mostly from the fact that it's at the foot of the Mississippi River and that it drains out this whole central part of the country. What moves through that port is a huge part of our national economy. So the issue is, Do we rebuild New Orleans, or do we maybe make another port on the Gulf of Mexico that is maybe you have the Mississippi River rejoin the Atchafalaya? However, no matter what we do, where the river goes is to a place that is by definition vulnerable. The Gulf of Mexico is where many hurricanes go. And so I think that's an interesting way to think about this. And Dave, what I really think is when people ask questions like that, it is that their mind needs a break from how big this problem is. I don't think that we can build any port at the foot of the Mississippi River or the Atchafalaya that isn't vulnerable at some point with some degree of probability to another hurricane. We can do better, and we can make sure we don't have such human suffering in the next time around. But I think that the odds are that no matter where we build a port on the Gulf of Mexico, and that we have to, that this is a risk.
Let's talk about some of the practical issues when you're talking about residential communities of poor and working people. And I want to just briefly evoke an experience that Philadelphia had 20 years ago where there was a police confrontation with a an armed radical group, which was mishandled. You may know of this. A lot of the audience, a lot of the audience won't recall, though, that what happened was that there was a fire developed as a part of the police confrontation, which raged out of control and destroyed a block and a half of row homes. 60 families were homeless overnight, and there was an enormous desire, naturally, to make these people whole, who were put out of their houses through no fault of their own. And the interesting question that arises in such a situation, which I think, and a similar one will arise in New Orleans, is one way to do that is to simply compensate people and let them relocate where they can or rebuild their lives where they can. But people also then will say, wait, this isn't just houses. This was a community. I have kinfolk here. I have neighbors. I want that community back. And I could imagine that in many, many communities in New Orleans, people will say, I don't want a check. I want my house back where it stood with my neighbors where they stood. As a planner, how do you deal with that issue?
Well, Dave, I think you're exactly right about how people feel in New Orleans. I was watching on the news today that there are people who won't leave yet. They say that they want to stay in their house. New Orleans is a town, it's often said, of families. There are it can seem like everybody is related to everybody else in that town. And I think that their desire will be to stay together. I think they need to feel like there is something left in their life. Imagine what their houses are like. The possessions they had, which are priceless to them, old pictures and so forth, it's all gone. And I just think in human terms, that it's important that if people want to stay together, that we figure out a way to let them stay together. I think that maybe we don't have to do anything so draconian as to say we're going to get everybody a check and then they can go find their way in Texas or Missouri or wherever. That instead what we do is give people some options and then let them choose. But my sense is that, you know, New Orleans wasn't a stage set. New Orleans was a city in which people lived, and a lot of what's so appealing about it was precisely the people who lived there, and they should be able to stay together. I was reading something in the Times yesterday by Mark Childress, who's a writer who wrote a thing about the 22 things that he would miss about New Orleans, and one of them, for me, was a sort of source of hope. He said, it's the only city in America where you can count on, within the first 15 minutes of your arrival, somebody will either call you baby or darling. Well, that wasn't the script for somebody who lived in New Orleans. That was the culture. And I'm sure if you went into the Astrodome now, they'd call you baby. And my point there is that that culture, if the people want to recreate it, then this country should allow them to.
My guest is Christina Ford. She was for 8 years the chief city planner for New Orleans. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is Christina Ford. She was for 8 years the chief city planner for the city of New Orleans. Right. Well, clearly, saving lives and then addressing the rebuilding tasks are urgent. But I want to take advantage of our access to you and all of your experience as a New Orleans Center planner. To look back for just a moment, in the 8 years that you were there, one of the things that I know that you do as a city planner is you develop a capital budget, and there are competing demands upon limited dollars for tourist infrastructure, for neighborhood redevelopment, and I'm sure in New Orleans for the system of levees and canals which protected the city. I mean, as you were participating in or at least witness to discussion of the levee system and whether it could or should withstand a Category 4 or 5 hurricane. I'm wondering, what was your sense of how vulnerable the city was?
Well, my sense was that the city was very vulnerable. The city, I mean, that's something that you know probably the first week you decide to live in New Orleans. Someone tells you, someday the hurricane is going to come that moves up the Mississippi River at the exact time that is high tide and that the city will be flooded. I will tell you, however, have touched on something else, which is why I think there needs to be the Central Redevelopment Authority, and that is the city of New Orleans didn't have many discussions about the levee system because that's a different jurisdiction. It's the levee district, which is, statewide. It goes through several states. There's the Orleans Parish Levee District. There is the Port of New Orleans, which is a state agency, and coordinating all of them was always difficult. The voters of New Orleans weren't asked to pass a bond issue for to restore the levees. I did hear former Mayor Bartholomew the other day who said that at the time they made the choice of how to build the levee system, they said, okay, what we're going to do is build a levee system that can withstand a Category 3 hurricane. And the person interviewing him said, well, why would you do that? Why didn't you say Category 5? And he said, well, I wasn't in those discussions, but I rather imagined that the cost difference between being prepared for a Category 3 and a Category 5 was so huge that taxpayers would have been unwilling to pay for it. Well, with the benefit of hindsight, we see that we'll pay many multiples of what it would have cost to have prepared for a Category 5, and we may make a better decision in the future. But that's why I say, Dave.
Well, if I get your point, what you're saying is that because of the kind of the jurisdictional lines and the bureaucratic funding streams, the taxpayers were never really asked whether they wanted to do that.
Well, the local ones weren't. That's right. And I think that's a national decision to decide how much money to spend on levies. And I think that's why all these factors now we have a chance to look at them again and make some better decisions in the future.
You know, in this moment of crisis, we're all pulling together and we stand as one. But once people are saved from immediate harm and a reconstruction process gets underway, various powerful economic interests will want to assert themselves. And you, of course, coped with this as a city planner for many years. I'm interested in things like, for example, the tourism and hospitality interests. I wonder, what role will they play, and will their ideas for reconstruction and using what will inevitably be somewhat limited dollars, will their ideas be different from those, for example, who want to preserve the neighborhoods of the working poor?
Well, I think, Dave, that's an interesting question, and I think it's why we need some of the best minds in America to come deal with it. You know, we could rebuild the French Quarter. We could rebuild the Garden District, which are two of the favorite tourist destinations. And there will be a great urgency felt by people in the tourism industry to put that back on its feet. I mean, that would be secondary to the Port of New Orleans, but then that'll be right up there. However, I have heard people say, what we don't want when we rebuild New Orleans is for it to look ersatz, that it looks like this is Disneyland's version of what used to be New Orleans. And in that statement, which I understand, in that statement is contained the real beauty of New Orleans. When you went to the French Quarter, it wasn't that each and every building that you saw was beautiful or beautifully maintained. There were plenty of poor people who lived in the French Quarter or in the surrounding, in the Faubourg Marigny or in Treme. And I think that the flavor that people feel like they are enjoying, not feel like they were enjoying, that they enjoyed when they came to New Orleans, was partly, we are diverse, and right next door to rich people live very poor people. And it's that flavor of the city which, to my mind, we must recreate, or else it won't be a very interesting tourist destination anymore. It will be like going to Disneyland. So I think that there is a way that can be expressed by economists that will make sense to somebody who's deciding how to rebuild the city and not just simply clean it up.
I'm wondering how you felt about the hedonistic New Orleans, the girls gone wild kind of part of the city's image.
Well, I should tell you, Dave, that we lived on Bourbon Street for 11 years.
And on Bourbon Street?
Yes, way down Bourbon Street. So we were two blocks from the closest bar, so it isn't the wild part of Bourbon Street, but Bourbon Street nonetheless. And the hedonism, you kind of watch it, and sometimes you'd leave for the sake of Mardi Gras and then come back, and other times just enjoy it. It's a city of license. It's a city that lets what you think of yourself, all of your illusions, be true. And I think that's one of its charms. And so I may not like something that someone does, or all I think is I wouldn't do that. I don't think you shouldn't do that. And I do think, realistically speaking, that part of the tolerance the New Orleanians have is that they know how provisional their life is. is completely provisional, reliant on the levee system and on a hurricane not hitting them, and that that sense of how provisional they are, first of all, allows them to really seize moments and to enjoy life while they have it, on the theory that it may not last long. And I think probably the thing I admire most about New Orleanians is their tolerance for other people, a sort of live and let live attitude.
Well, Christina Ford, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Of course, I enjoyed it.
Christina Ford. From 1992 to 2000, she was Director of City Planning for the City of New Orleans. She's now Professor of Environmental Studies at Bowdoin College in Maine. I'm Dave Davies, and this is Fresh Air.